dreams so much more significant than others.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how long do they remember those dreams?
Sometimes their entire life.
Yeah, really? this dream, I'll never forget it. Usually, you know, I've had dreams, and, you know, I can recall certain points of my dream, but this thing is so vivid in my mind that there is no way I could ever forget it. The only thing, I wasn't afraid of death.
Can we say it was really a dream?
Pardon me? Well, I didn't die.
Can we say it was really a dream, or maybe you were out of body?
I don't know.
You were asleep when the physical body was asleep.
Yes,
while this
I was asleep. Yes.
And during the dream, did you know that you were totally conscious in the middle of this?
In the dream, I didn't understand the situation I was in. You know, I was by this water tower, and this person came up with a rifle. And I couldn't see his face because it was like a hat or something. And I remember him pointing the gun, and I'm thinking, you know, oh, this is serious. So I immediately jumped down to the ground, but, you know, it didn't protect me. I still felt getting shot.
But you're okay now.
Oh, yeah, I'm living.
That's right.
Did you learn anything that you would call positive, that
has been
very, very helpful to you and improve the quality of your spiritual and mental life?
Oh, well, I'm not afraid of death at all.
That's good.
Were you before the experience, before that dream?
Well, you know, I really didn't understand it. I mean, I never really came close to dying, so I really couldn't say. I just didn't want to die, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if I died, I'm not scared of it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very comfortable. But the only thing I didn't like, I hope if I do die, people will know who I am, or, you know, these people who were with me, you know, who at all I was. And
that sort of depends on you, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I was trying to be friendly.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Oh, thank you.
And
one other thing. Is there a way possible, maybe I could be hypnotized and find out? I think this happened, like, during World War II time.
Well, I don't know.
Now you're maybe talking about regression.
Yeah.
And some people do find out things during that. I can't necessarily say that that's the way for you to go. You have to look within and decide that for yourself.
I see.
You know, there are many psychics who say that they can just look at you and your aura or read you and can give you a pretty good sketch of your past lives.
I see.
It's very difficult, however, to relate to the accuracy of that.
I know.
That it becomes, you know, a very interesting story. But one of the interesting things that I find about the work of Dr. Frank Baranowski is that he doesn't believe anything anybody says to him
under
regression. However, that doesn't mean he doesn't investigate, and that the investigators don't go into the old records and to the old tax records and to writings and books and seeing if these places and people which were related to and under that state didn't actually exist. Now, when they do exist, and he has over 4,000 such cases now.
Those are harder to explain.
we're talking now about the fact that we have a consistent thing that's coming up which violates the way most of us think. The chances of you being able to hypnotize me or me being able to hypnotize you, and I start telling you all about another life and I give you facts and addresses and telephone numbers and whatever. May be the case, or speak in a language that I don't know how to speak and speak it perfectly.
Uh-huh.
Then, when that is verified, that those people did exist and that language did exist and they were speaking with a great deal of accuracy about that time period as far as we understand history, but you've got to understand history is always reconstructed history. There's no such thing as pure history.
Uh-huh.
You know, the losers of a war never write about it, so the only accounting you get is from the winners of the war. Right?
Yeah, that's
so
true.
We know that history is, at best, askew.
Uh-huh.
But from the best we can tell, then we have to start investigating those things very carefully.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much, and good night.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Good night. Glad that you joined us. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Diane Morrissey. It's Open Mind.
Monica.
Hello, Monica.
First-time caller, and I'm a little nervous.
Don't be nervous. Unless you're out of body, and you shouldn't be on the phone.
Well, I like to share my experience that happened to me. And this was a couple of years back, and I was asleep, and I felt my body go, I felt like my body go out of me, and I was about in the ceiling. And I could see myself, but the feeling was such a peaceful feeling. But I had to make a choice whether to just let my body float away, and I knew it was death, or come back into my body, because I still had children that I was responsible to take care of.
Well, when you said you had a choice, did someone say, you know, go A or B? Was it awareness of your own?
Oh, an awareness of my own. It was more an awareness of my own. It was like a best friend, you know, it was an awareness of my own of what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Either to come back into my body because of my children.
That was your sole reason?
Yes. That was the reason I came back. But I had a if I didn't, I knew I was going to die.
What's your name, hon?
Monica.
Monica?
Yes.
Diane?
Monica, I'd like to tell you that that's really common. And if you indeed had a slight near-death experience at that moment or was out of body for just a minute or two, many people who have that happen to them and they're floating at the ceiling, they find that choice is the ultimate moment in the experience, that they have to decide. And the decision comes from within the spirit or the soul or the astral body or whatever this is that is outside of the physical. And I myself also had to make that choice.
Yeah.
And I made it because I didn't have children. I made it because I wanted to touch something. And I can't tell you why, but I just know that every time I share that near-death experience and people's lives change because now suddenly they feel as I do, they catch a little from me, that death is no longer a frightening aspect of their life, but something that's going to be a natural transition and something easy to experience, not difficult. And that's the most important gift possibly that a near-death experiencer can pass on, is to share how marvelous it is and how wonderful.
Exactly, because I didn't, you know, like I've heard people say they just all of a sudden fall into their body or something like that. But mine was very, very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to me about 2-3 times.
Do you?
In that same night.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband...
You're really rubbing it in the ground here, you know, Monica.
Do you remember how you re-entered the physical body?
I just, like, floated right into it.
Uh-huh, so all parts merged with all parts sort of simultaneously?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. You girls are making me feel like a reformed drunk in a bar and I can't touch a thing.
When I re-entered the physical body, I dove into the back of my head. And that happens for about, you know, several people. 10-12% of the near-death experiencers sometimes dive into the back of the head.
Oh, no. I just, you know, just
heck.
Went, just floated back in. And the next day, you know, like you say, it's something that you'll never forget.
Right. And
I'll never forget it in my life.
As you look back on the experience, during the experience, when you were at the ceiling, was it a positive experience? Did you feel marvelous while you were out?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, definitely.
And this is, again,
definitely.
Quite common. When one gets back to the physical body, that's when the trauma sets in. Oh, my goodness, what happened to me? How could I explain this? How could I be out of my body? I must have been dead.
All right, you've got to go through, you know, physical life is really kind of a downer compared to life without it. But there is a very profound reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
Which we will get into, in the next hour a little bit. There are some things to be said about that. Monica, thank you very much for sharing that with us, okay?
Okay, and thank you. We really enjoy your show, too, Bill.
All right, well...
We listen to you every Saturday.
It's you guys that make the show. You see what you did? You got us into a deep train of thought, and that's what it's all about.
Okay, thank you, and good night, both of you.
I'm Bill Jenkins. Be right back. And before the near-death experience. Now, I know a lot of times we don't plan a death experience exactly, but what are some of the things to be looking for?
Well, for a near-death experience, a person is usually close to death, and the physical body is most likely in some kind of physical danger, not from another person necessarily, just its vital signs are in danger, and it can sometimes happen in severe stress. But the out-of-body experience has some very unusual side effects before it takes place. I was hoping you'd ask me about that.
Well, I just told Diane if there was a question she was hoping I would ask, and I wouldn't, and I wasn't asking it, just to assume that I'm not smart enough to do that. So, Diane, this question that I was supposed to ask, and I forgot. What is it?
It's what is happening to the physical body just before one has an out-of-body experience.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Did I? How
yeah.
marvelous. Okay. Sometimes the person experiences a very quick, sudden, tremendous jerk to the physical body, so much so that it feels as if you're almost like walking on the edge of a curb, and just as you're about to drift off to sleep, your leg kind of slips off the curb, and you just jerk, the whole body shakes, and you find yourself suddenly awake. And this is because you've already been out of your body, and you've returned only because it happened so quickly.
Now
you don't recall it.
That does happen to me quite often.
And if you would just wake up right then, Bill, discover you're out.
It's sometime embarrassing. And sometime Evelyn will say, is everything okay? Because it's such a jolt, it'll mm-hmm. wake her up. It should, because, you know, I just jump 4 feet off the bed, you know.
But not always does the person next to you acknowledge that you moved. And I would say it's close to 70-80% of the time. If the people out there, when this jerking sensation is happening to the body, and they ask the person next to them, hey, did I move just now? The person will turn around and say, hey, I've been reading my book here. I'm wide awake, and I can tell you the bed didn't move. You didn't move. The blankets didn't move. And this is because the astral body was coming back to the physical, and they feel the sensation that the entire...
Everything moved.
Yes, and it didn't. The astral body is what moved.
In other words, you didn't make a good landing.
Possibly. Maybe you overshot it and went through the bed.
I make a bunch of bad landings, if that's what I'm happening, because... No, sometimes Evelyn even, you know, thinks that I'm getting spastic on us every now and then. I calm her down.
This could get strange,
this is
Bill.
This is a fabulous show, so I've got to slow that down just a little bit. Oh, my. I hope you're having as good a time as we are. Diane Morrissey is with me. Diane is the regional coordinator for the International Association of Near-Death Studies. Hello?
Hello, Bill?
Yeah, you're on.
This is Barbara. I want to say hello to Diane. And I was sitting here smiling every time she was explaining something because that's exactly what happened.
Barbara, did this happen to you?
The greatest gift I've had in this life was the gift of death.
It's true. Don't we live a lot more after it happens?
Oh, it is absolutely unbelievable.
You had a near-death experience?
I most certainly did.
Have you ever talked about this before?
Oh, I have, and I have written a book, and it's in process of being edited right now.
Well, best of luck with the book. Well,
thank you very much. It isn't particularly on that. It's on the path that it led me to afterwards, but I'm not here to talk about that.
I'm really fascinated about that particular aspect. You know, it's one thing to have this delightful experience, hopefully. But it's another thing to come back, learn from that, and improve the quality of not only your own life, but hopefully the lives of those around you.
One of the things that happens is it gives you, as Diane said, the feeling I have gotten from the time. What happened to me, Diane, so that you know, is, you know, as you know, or any of us who have experienced this, you're standing in this almost ethereal but powerful white light. Would you say that's a correct definition?
Oh, yes.
And it's almost like a magnet. You are dying to walk into this white light, and yet something keeps you standing there. And while I was standing there, as I always say, whatever your beliefs happen to be is okay. I always say that I had a therapy session with God or a higher force. And this happens just by thought transference, and all these things are said to you.
It is true. It's overwhelming.
But you don't know how they're said to you. It's like a thought transference. You don't hear a voice, and yet the words are there, or the thought pattern is there.
And all at the same time, huh?
Right. And I was told, Barbara, I'm going to take everything away from you. Absolutely everything you have will be taken away from you, and you're going back, and I'm going to close all doors on you, but I will open better doors for you. And I said, okay, and I didn't even think anything of it. And the next thing I knew, I was in ICU, intensive care. I had been there for 4 days, hooked up to all kinds of machinery. And I looked up and opened my eyes, bouncing back from Netherland, and just knew everything was just going to be fine.
Right.
And directly after that, within, you know, a short time after that, it was like all my vital signs, everything, you know, this was all touch and go for 3.5 days, just went, you know, just came right back, was miraculous, and I was immediately sent down to my room.
Well, did you have some things taken away from you afterwards?
Everything, Bill. A condo, my car, all my money, all my stocks, all my bonds, my business, you name it.
Everything was taken away?
Absolutely everything.
Did new doors open up?
Well, now that's... That's a moot point. I'm still... The
sometimes
doors,
it takes time.
Yes, no, there were many doors open. What you said...
You know, what we have to do is run, huh? Because the big hand is on 12, as my engineer tells me, and the little hand is on 11.
Okay.
Which means we have to run. But thank you very much. This is such a fun time for so many on a Saturday night, and... The, you know, we're talking about the near-death experience, and that has some sort of a negative connotation in so many minds. But if you've been with us for these first 2 hours, you find out that that's really not all that bad. Perhaps we have the wrong view. And my guest is Diane Morrissey of the International Association of Near-Death Studies from Connecticut University. She's the regional director here, serving, Southern California, the western part of the United States area. A great deal of study has gone into that. A great deal of people have a conception. I want to say misconception, but I'll not make that editorial judgment. I'll just say a conception about death that is enormously negative. And I must admit, Diana, although I realize that in my own belief system that reincarnation is a process of life, that we will go through this, that it isn't all that bad, but... at this point in time, I'm certainly not looking forward to death.
Well, I can tell you sometimes I do look forward, only because I have a feeling or an inkling what could happen. And most people who survive a near-death experience, those who don't, and Dr. Ring just says he doesn't get the questionnaires back.
I suppose that...
But those who do say it's...
The Postal Service doesn't get that far.
Those who do say it's just marvelous, and... we certainly change, not only our lives are transformed to want to live better, closer to the universe, care more about what happens around us, about other people, to love more, to feel more, all of that, and not to be afraid of death on the other side.
You know, I get criticized every now and then. I don't mind that, because we talk about this, and it's, if I can paraphrase, it's Bill, you talk in such glowing terms about death. If everybody felt the way you did, then no one would... and then they get into a hard time saying, be afraid of dying. And as if the fear of death is to be the great motivator for you to do the right things in life.
I think if more people studied and or talked about death and dying... they would live much better lives. It's not because you avoid the subject that you live better. It's because you acknowledge that there could be an end to it all.
Well, I also question the fear of death being the motivator to do anything.
Well, I don't think that's a reason, but I do believe before my near-death experience that I didn't think about death at all.
Right.
Because I basically probably feared it, so it was something I never thought about.
It'll just happen one day.
Not to me.
Yeah. No, it's not going to happen to you.
That's right.
But it gets into that question of motivation. If we are motivated out of fear to do the right thing...
That's the wrong thing.
That's the wrong motivation.
Absolutely.
We haven't made any progress.
That's correct.
And we are still rather primitive, animalistic, Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm.
If our motivations then for doing the right things come from a much higher level, now you're doing right things. But to be fearful and to do things out of fear, now this doesn't mean that I'm going to go and deliberately stand in front of a racing, you know, freight train. That's not doing something out of fear. That's doing something out of stupidity.
Correct.
Or the desire to end your own life, which is probably not a good idea in most cases.
That's true also.
I just wanted to touch on those. What are some of the other questions that I haven't asked that should have?
Some other effects that can happen to the physical body before one gets out?
Yes.
And they are where you might feel that the bed is shaking under you, that there's an earthquake, and you jump out of bed, and you look at the chandelier or something around you, and you go, wow, that's not moving.
I've experienced that 3 or 4 times.
Yes.
But it turned out to be my dog, Brandy, scratching.
I know. Mine's this Penny and Tuffy. And they do that too. But it frequently is the vibrations in the astral body that reverberate and transfer to the physical, and you feel like there's an earthquake or the body shakes tremendously, and after this you can find and discover that you are out of your body. Another thing that can happen...
Is this one of those cases too, like the jumping back in, where if someone were with you, and quite often that happens... though you've had the sensation of this great shaking, like when you come back in, or like you just, the vibrating, the person next to you, who may have been observing you during this period, may not be aware of it?
That's correct. That's correct. And that's why it's important to ask the person next to you, did I move? Did you notice that my body suddenly jerked? Or did you see that my body was shaking quite violently right then? And when they say no, how do you explain that? And if you pay attention to those times before you sleep, you can experience that you are indeed half in or half out or all the way out of the body. But if you're not paying attention to it, they go by unnoticed and you aren't aware of it. Another thing happens that we mentioned briefly earlier was the paralysis that can happen to the body. And understand this is not a permanent paralysis, but just something temporary if you're only half in or half out. And the totally physical body, you know you're awake, you've been sleeping in the middle of the night, and you wake up, and you find that you can't open your eyes as hard as you try. You can't open your eyes, you can't move your hands, you can't move your legs. And the best way, if you have this happen to you, I know from personal experience, is don't try to open the eyes. That doesn't work. The best thing to do is just simply try to move your little fingers, and you'll notice that the jerk happens right after this. The body will jerk quite suddenly, and you'll be wide awake.
What's the most interesting place you've traveled to in the out-of-body state?
Probably to another galaxy and experience sort of a oneness with that. And
with that or them? Were there other?
Well, there are other people, but I don't always meet other people. But I think that a good thing for astral projection and out-of-body experience to take place, if one could research this, and certainly we are doing this across the country, is to possibly pursue the search of missing persons. If one is out of body, there is no time there. It is possible to see past as well as future. It would therefore be possible to look for a missing person. Also, probably to solve crimes.
Certainly, it could be useful in crime prevention or...
True.
Well, if you can solve a crime in this fashion, of course,
yes,
the judges in the courts are going to look at you and say...
That's true.
Get off my back.
But times do change.
In talking to Bob Monroe, the explorers, when they go back into the past, found that they could, they have not yet ever done that, but they could affect...
A future event.
A future event.
Absolutely.
And I asked him, I said, well, if you were in the out-of-body state, that's a different realm. You know, if you can pinch somebody's cheek and they won't feel you, I mean, how can you affect... If you were around, let's say, a young Adolf Hitler, how could you affect that in the out-of-body state?
Well, I do believe that everything's happening at the same moment. This is my personal belief, that there isn't any time. If for a person who has a near-death experience, and these people come back and share, wow, it was so interesting, there wasn't any time on the other side. And when they wake up, they're suddenly aware that time is back with them. And wow, everything happened at the same moment. If this is truly taking place during a near-death experience, my concept of it, and it's just a personal one for me, is that there isn't any time, that things do happen simultaneously all around us, both the past and the future. And this is just a personal belief of mine because of my near-death experience and then watching the out-of-body state and being aware that I could contact past times as well as future ones while I was out of body.
Well, when you're in the past, you know, kind of get back to that question, how could you affect an event in the past, which of course would have an effect on our present?
It would be possible to see a past event and see, or even a future one, and see how something is going to turn out. Mm-hmm. And then when you find yourself in that particular situation, and this has happened to me, that you are able to better handle it emotionally, physically, and consciously, because you have an awareness of how it was going to be. And now you're in the experience. It is not deja vu. It's much bigger than that. And you go, wow, I saw this 2 nights ago while I was out of body, and now it is happening. And I remember during the out of body that it wasn't going quite as well as I wanted it to. Now you can suddenly change your consciousness and say, hey, this needs to be done in order to have a more effective life or a more effective response.
Well, and when you're looking into the future, then you're looking into a whole series of probabilities.
Correct.
When you're looking into the past, though, those probabilities have come into place and have happened and are more or less, like we would say, cast in stone, or is that so?
I don't know. I don't have any answers. I'm not sure about anything. Mm-hmm. But I do know that it is possible to be out of one's body, and an out of body is not a near-death experience, but there are tremendous similarities between the two.
Okay, let's go to our callers and see what's on their mind. I don't know your name, so give me your first name and what's on your mind. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yes. I always had the feeling that I was another person before I was born, and I was wondering if anything you've seen among these people who've had these experiences would tend to pacified all these the sayings that that's a person's imagination.
Mm-hmm. Well, that question you're asking is a very difficult one to answer. I'm not sure that I can. I don't have the knowledge within me. I didn't have your experience.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that most people who have near-death experiences don't say that they feel a past life. However, some do. Some feel that during that sequence they remember other lives. It isn't true with everyone. For me, I just felt this one.
I never had a near-death experience. I never almost died.
Uh-huh.
Never did. It's just a feeling I've had just as a living person.
I've had many people in my classes who've come up and told me, Diane, you know, since I've heard you share or whatever, I just feel so comfortable because I've always known that I've been here, even before I was born. And I just tell them I'm sure that's right, because it's very hard to conflict someone's opinion about their self.
But do you have an awareness of a previous life or a previous circumstance?
Yeah, it's just a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing real concrete that you could write down about? Like names, addresses, telephone numbers, and places like that?
Oh, not really.
Yeah?
Not really.
I don't know why we get these feelings.
It's just vague, you know, just very vague.
A lot of people have them, so I would say don't be concerned about that.
Well, I just wonder if it's true or not. Another thing, I wanted to say one more thing real quick. You know, so many people have had this out-of-body experience.
Some of us haven't.
Oh. And I wonder. I believe that there is such a thing because it happens so often, but when people talk about traveling to Mars and seeing green monsters and things like this that some people do, and going back to the year 1846 and so forth.
That's just local traffic. They go further than that.
Oh, I don't see that there's going to be such a thing as time. How do you tell the difference between a real experience and paranoid schizophrenia?
Good question.
I'm not a psychologist. I don't know that I can answer your question, but I would say, if you ask maybe a schizophrenic person in the daytime how are they, maybe they have a problem with that. In other words, they're not, as I understand it, they have a hard time relating in the physical life, not just in the
hallucinatory life. So with a person who has had an out-of-body experience, they're aware that that's totally real. But in their waking physical life, they are responsible human beings that have a job and they're average, ordinary people. And these things are happening to them and they can't understand them because nobody talks about it.
You know, I can give you a story and I think it's one of the gauges you can go by. Because you can hear a lot of stories and people do have imaginations. And sometimes they just like to shoot the bull, as far as that goes. And a couple of years ago, my older brother was visiting me. Now, he's from Texas, and we don't have anything down like that in Texas, as you know. But when he got here to California, and he was spending a couple of weeks with his little brother and found out all the things that little brother was in, he had to admit a story to me. He was very unhappy with his wife and the kids one night, and he sort of laid down on the living room floor with his head propped up against the couch watching television. And the next thing he knew, he was floating above his body, which, of course, immediately made me angry. Here my big brother is doing this, and I can't even do it. Floated up into the attic of the house and saw that there was some frayed wires up there. And he works for the Texas Power and Light Company, where they make the electricity, and he had never really been up in the attic of the house. Floated on out into the street. Floated on down to the control room of the generating plant where he generally works and sat and listened to the conversation of his buddies there for a long time and casually floated back home. The next...